This is Rabbi Avital Hochstein of Machon Hadar. Parashot Behar B'chukotai, 5777. The seventh year, sabbatical or Shemitah. The Lord spoke to Moses on Mount Sinai. Speak to the Israelite people and say to them, when you enter the land that I assign to you, the land shall observe a Sabbath to the Lord. Our parasha opens with a commandment to rest in the seventh year. We find such a commandment in the book of Shemot as well. Though the two sources portray the seventh year in different terms that create distinct and unique experiences. In the following lines, we shall compare the two. The commandment in Vayikra applies to all of Israel as a community and is dependent upon their entering into the land. When you enter the land. The entity that must rest is the land itself. The land shall observe a Sabbath. And this resting is defined as being connected to the divine, a Sabbath of the Lord. How one must behave in the seventh year is primarily understood in contrast to the behavior during the other six. For 6 years, the people of Israel work in the fields, planting, pruning, and harvesting. The seventh year stands in contrast as a time during which you shall not sow your field or prune your vineyard. There is no cutting of branches or picking of fruit in order that the land should experience a Sabbath of complete rest. The sabbatical year is defined by its prohibition. It is characterized by what may not be done for this duration. For 6 years, a person's life is characterized by continuous action, but come the seventh year, he is called to inaction, and this inaction is defined as having theological weight, a Sabbath for the Lord. The produce of the land in the seventh year is designated for eating. It is primarily yours, and also designated to others who are connected to you, your male and female slaves, your hired and bound laborers who live with you, and your cattle and the beasts in your land. All of these other entities who have access to eating the produce are defined by their relationship to the person who is commanded vis-a-vis the land. Therefore, it appears that the produce is for the person who owns the land, and through him, all who serve him live with him, including the animals he owns and who reside on his land. The focus of the seventh year is on the sabbatical. The root of the word, Shabbat, appears 7 times over these verses and expresses withdrawal from work, human withdrawal from work, which results in the land getting a Shabbat. No one is permitted to act upon or guide the growth during this year, to manipulate the earth in any way, or to impose their power or will upon the ground. However, the Shabbat of the earth is not one in which the earth doesn't produce any yield. It does produce, but without human interference. It is during this time that humanity is invited to observe nature without trying to exert power over it. The seventh year commands a person to do nothing in the face of his needs and dependence on the land, despite his own responsibility to others who depend on him. He has to rely on the land. He depends upon it. And he is required to trust it. The opening verse of this section describes, the Lord spoke to Moses on Mount Sinai, speak to the Israelite people and say to them, and so on. The verses locate the command in Mount Sinai, the greatest moment of divine communication with people. This framing clarifies that the Shabbat of the land is a critical component of the fundamental connection that exists between humanity and God, and suggests understanding the commandments regarding the seventh year from this vantage point. This is the crux of the theological weight of the expression Shabbat of the Lord. It teaches us that in this year we have to direct ourselves to and find ourselves dependent upon God. The seventh year obligates a person to recognize limitations, to rely on and trust in God. The significance of situating these verses at Mount Sinai is further strengthened by the Midrash. In the book of Shemot, Moshe is described reading the book of the covenant to all of Israel. And the verses say, "Then he took the record of the covenant and read it aloud to the people, and they said, 'All that the Lord has spoken, we will faithfully do.'" After this reading of the covenant and the acceptance of its content by the people of Israel, Moshe enacts a ceremonial confirmation of the sealing of the covenant between Israel and God. Moshe took the blood and dashed it onto the people and said, "This is the blood of the covenant that the Lord now makes with you concerning all these commandments." A midrash in the Michilta of Rabbi Ishmael tries to identify what it was precisely that Moshe read to Bnei Israel at that moment. Rabbi Ishmael claims that Moshe actually read the verses from our parasha, the laws of the sabbatical year among them, and that this served as the basis for receiving all the mitzvot at Sinai. Accepting the laws of the seventh year is thus understood as the thing that binds Israel to God, the foundation upon which all the other mitzvot are based. Everything flows from the way that the seventh year invites us to recognize our dependence on nature, on God. Awareness of dependence is foundational and necessary to any relationship, and to the one with God as well, and therefore foundational to the acceptance of all of the mitzvot. We are also commanded to keep the seventh year in the book of Shemot. But there the commandment has a very different character. 6 years you shall sow your land and gather in its yield, and in the seventh you shall let it go and abandon it. Let the needy among your people eat of it, and what they leave let the wild beasts eat. You shall do the same with your vineyards and your olive groves. Here, the description of the mitzvah is spoken in the singular. The verses in Shemot are directed towards individuals. In Shemot, the land is not the object or subject of rest. Actually, we do not see the verb Shabbat, rest, at all here. Further, whereas in Vayikra, the land is referred to on its own terms as the land, here, the land is described as being owned, as being your land. The commandment in the seventh year is a product of this belonging. In the seventh year, you should let it go and abandon it. For 6 years, the land only belongs to you, and on the seventh year, the ownership is let go of. A person has to act like one who has no property, one who is not a landowner, and do this by leaving the land alone, abandoning it completely, and relinquishing all rights to the land. Whereas Shemot also teaches how one should act in the seventh year through constructing it with how one works in the 6 years, 6 years you shall sow, and in the seventh you shall let it go and abandon it, the contrast is different. In Vayikra, the distinction is between activity and inactivity, between the permissibility or impermissibility of working the land. In Shemot, the behavior in the seventh year is treated as active, as a positive mitzvah. The person is not commanded to refrain from labor, but rather he has to abandon his land and free it from his control. He has an active responsibility to emancipate the land. During the 6 years, we are the owners and controllers of our land. In the seventh year, we have to let go. We must relinquish our lot, our claim to the land. The Midrash demands that a person actively demonstrate that they are relinquishing control over the land, stressing that it is insufficient to merely allow the poor to eat from one's crops. Rather, one need actively dismantle the fences around one's property. And the Midrash says, and abandon it. Why does the Torah say this? So that the poor can eat? I can collect it and distribute it to the poor. Therefore, the verses say, you shall let it go and abandon it, meaning that you create openings in the fence. One of the results of lack of ownership is lack of access to what the ground produces. In contrast to the book of Vayikra, where, and whatever the land produces during its Shabbat is for you to eat, in Shmot, the original six-year owners are not listed as those who may eat from the land. Let the needy among your people eat it, and what they leave, let the wild beasts eat. This year is a year of reversal. Those who are usually owners of the land do not get to eat its produce. There's another crucial element that is present in Vayikra, but absent in Shmot, the divine component. God does not appear in Shmot at all. The activity in Shmot is restricted to the human realm. The absence of divine interaction or relevance underscores the total social reversal that the seventh year represents. This is a year where the owners are not owners, where the people on the outside become the people on the inside. In conclusion, though modern people in the Western world are for the most part removed from land, we control so much property. The seventh year demands that we recognize the dependence in our lives as emerges from the seventh year, as described in Vayikra. It also commands us to remove ourselves from ownership, to experience living without, as the book of Shmot teaches us, maybe as a basis to an experience of equality. And one need ponder about the meaning and difference between the two descriptions. For example, one makes the reality of dependence concrete, and the other invites us to experience a reality of not. Are these two sides of the same coin, or actually opposite experiences? What relationships does each suggest? Does dependence enhance relationships while an experience of not disconnects or releases? What are times when one needs a Shabbat for the land, Shabbat for God, times that concretize dependence, and is there need for relinquishing ownership and experiencing not at other times? With these questions, we leave Parshiyot Behar Bechukotai and move into one thought in summary on the book of Vayikra. Leaving Sefer Vayikra, love your fellow as yourself, I am the Lord. These lines conclude our present engagement with the book of Vayikra. We have seen that the book of Vayikra categorically rejects the distinction made between interpersonal laws that affect our relationship with other people and ritual laws that reflect our relationship with God. This book creates a frame for understanding the theological dimensions of social laws and the human dimensions of the theological ones, those instances that seem to only affect the vertical relationship between a person and God. So the laws of sacrifices include circumstances that are entirely interpersonal. From the passing of Aaron's sons, we learn to make space for human intuition in the face of an inclination to be stringent in the eyes of the law. The chapter that focuses on the tzara'at affliction taught us that an entire social structure is embedded in the encounter between the afflicted person and the Kohen. And similarly, in our parasha, we see that the laws of Shemitah, which ask us to rescind our claims of ownership and instruct us in the ways that the social structure is impacted by questions of ownership, is titled Shabbat for the Lord. The book of Vayikra concludes with stating that these matters have their origin in the revelation at Mount Sinai, and that all of us, not just Aaron and his sons, are responsible to fulfill them. These are the mitzvot that God commanded Moshe to the people of Israel at Mount Sinai. Sefer Vayikra, the book of Vayikra as a whole, warns us against thinking erroneously that engaging in the realm of the sacred is separate from our social, human lives. At the same time, it teaches us that our human actions carry theological weight. Shabbat Shalom.